front-end developer for the first time in my career.
User experience design.
I'm a back-end developer. I mainly work with Drupal.
Welcome to another episode of Behind the Screens, where we go beyond the code and into the community. I'm your host, Chris Albrecht. Let's dive in. Behind the Screens is made possible by Lullabot. Lullabot is a strategy, design, and development company where we turn great content into captivating user experiences. Find us on Twitter at Lullabot or in your browser at lullabot.com. We'd love to meet you. On this episode, going behind the screens with David Needham from Pantheon. Hey, David.
Hey, how's it going?
Good. So we're here at Drupal Camp Atlanta. You came out from the Chicagoland area to give a training yesterday. How'd that go?
It went very well. We talked about development workflows on Pantheon. We kind of stepped through the concept of using a dev test in live environments. We talked about using feature branches, then using configuration management, touching briefly on what it was like in Drupal 7, and then going through some demos in Drupal 8 with the new configuration management system.
Excellent. Is there anything new with Pantheon these days? I know you guys tend to move really fast with some of the tools that you're coming up with. What's something we should know about working with Pantheon?
Yeah, well, some of the kind of high demand, kind of cutting edge of what we've been working with lately has to do with some advanced workflows for teams that want to use Composer with Drupal 8. We have this technique working with third-party systems where you can host all of your code in a bare repository in something like GitHub or Bitbucket, and then use continuous integration. So we've been working with CircleCI lately to basically build out your website on demand whenever you make a commit or a pull request or anything like that. Spin it over into a Pantheon multi-dev environment so you can test it and, you know, kind of go through the usual QA process. And then once your senior dev or whomever has approved it and actually merged the pull request in, the CircleCI will go through, you know, the process of doing testing and actually deleting the multi-dev environment and actually merging it into dev and Pantheon. So it helps automate the process of a team going through code reviews and doing testing and automatic QA and stuff like that.
Wow. That is a huge bonus to the workflow, having all that run behind the scenes. Something I heard that is also being incorporated, and it's something that I've wanted for a long time, that I when we had clients that were working with Acquia, we could implement these webhooks so that when you were pushing code between an environment or bringing files or databases between environments, these hooks would fire automatically at the process. Mm-hmm. Is there something like that now with Pantheon as well?
Yeah, it's actually been around for a few years now, but it's called Quicksilver. With Quicksilver on Pantheon, you're able to write scripts that execute between different workflows. So, for example, whenever you clone your database from live to the dev environment, or whenever you deploy code to whichever environment, you can execute this code, which would do things like maybe import your configuration or talk to a third-party service like notify you on Slack or update a Jira ticket. Any of those things are possible.
Wow, that's amazing. That is definitely something I'm going to be looking more into. I've been wanting to do something like that for a long time now because we always have a relatively similar workflow between projects where you either want to revert all your features or clear the cache or any number of those things. Now with Drupal 8, the configuration management, you want to absorb your configuration into the database, synchronize, right. Synchronize your configuration. So you could have all those scripts set up to run automatically instead of having to manually do these deployment steps for each push.
Right. I mean, a lot of people know Pantheon for the hosting. And I think hosting is a big part of it, of course, but we really like to focus on the tools that we provide for development teams. And specifically, I see my role as sort of developer relations, where I can help developers of any size for any organization be more successful by automating, by leaning on the tools that we have so that you don't have to reinvent the wheel over and over again and do things the tedious manual way.
Yeah. So tell me a little bit more about your position with Pantheon. What is your title and what do you specifically do with that?
Yeah, so my official title is Agency and Community Training Manager. Part of what that means is the community part means that I go to conferences and whenever I can give talks, we do trainings, we do things like that. And part of the agency side is whenever possible, I meet with agencies and train them how to be more effective on Pantheon. So it involves a lot of training, but I also help kind of run our team of engineers who like to focus on training and helping developers just be more successful.
That's great. Does that require a lot of travel of you?
So I have a family, and so when I was looking at the position originally, I told them up front, I'm not going to be able to travel a ton, but what we came down to is about once a month for anywhere from 3 to 5 days, typically, and they honor that. It's really nice.
That's awesome. Yeah, I know Lullabot has a great relationship with Pantheon. We love you guys. We work together on a lot of stuff. I think we get along really well because we have very similar values from the top down at the company. So that's really great that they can do something like that for you and still make that work. So if somebody is trying to figure out, like, they need a good host, but they also are really interested in some of these tools, what's one piece of advice you might give somebody to get started if they've got, like, an existing site out there, they're thinking about Pantheon, something maybe that you've come upon recently that was sort of like, oh yeah, we should be doing that, or this is the best way to go to get into it?
So one of the things that you can do with Pantheon is, I mean, all of our sandbox sites are free. I mean, you could create a new website. You could even migrate your existing site if you want to check it out, see how it's going to perform and how the workflow is going to work and things like that. And actually try it out before you go live with it. So anyone who's thinking about, you know, what tools might be available or, you know, what level of hosting is appropriate for them, you can just come and try it out, you know, and see what it's like.
Cool. So it's free to get started up, and you get sort of one of those obscured domain names. You don't get your own domain name yet. But are all the tools available on those sandbox sites?
Yeah. All of the developer tools are available. In some cases, you might have to sign up as an agency in order to have some of those tools unlocked for you. However, we kind of define agency as someone who does work for someone else, or if you are working with lots of sites, you know, multiple sites or things like that. So really anyone could sign up to be an agency and get, you know, Multidev and Quicksilver and our command line tool Terminus. All of those things are available.
That's wonderful. So I like to flip it around a little bit after we talk about the work and the code and some of that. So tell me a little bit about yourself. Since you do travel a bit for work, do you have any really good travel tips or something that along the way that's like, I couldn't travel without this now?
Yeah, that's a really great question. I mean, I've always been fairly minimalist. You know, I find a lot of satisfaction in being able to pare down and kind of do as much as I can with as little as I have. And so, you know, traveling, like for this trip, it's 3 days, 4 nights, you know, something like that. I just have my backpack, and my backpack carries, you know, all of my clothes. I have this nifty, like zippered pouch where I can like put everything into it, and it kind of, you know, keeps it really tidy. So it's, yeah, travel light. You know, carry as much as you can. It makes it easier, so you don't have to like lug your luggage through, worry about a, you know, overhead bins. So you don't have to worry about checking anything. Mm-hmm. You just pick up and go, and it's on your back, so it's easy.
How do you get away with traveling with so few things? I feel like I'm getting better about this myself too, but I remember those days where you're like, oh, this and that, and I might need this, and it might rain, and I might have that. So what's your trick for paring all that down?
I mean, it's tricky. I mean, I certainly still overpack. For this trip, for example, I brought a board game that I haven't played yet, and I don't know if I'll have time to play. I brought a coat that I need for Chicago, you know, when I left and came, but it's all packed away, and I don't need it here at all, of course. And part of it's checking the weather and kind of taking a gamble whether or not you need to bring a raincoat or, you know, shorts or whatever for the trip. But ultimately, I've taken enough trips now that I know I've taken this thing, whatever this thing is, on so many trips, and I've never used it. I'm just going to leave it behind this time.
Yeah. All those what-if items start to dwindle in size.
Right. And I'm a big fan of Tim Ferriss and even like Matt Mullenweg. They both have some really great blog posts about travel and about like what they bring in their carry-on bag and stuff like that. So I follow their posts that they do on that every year and kind of see what they pack and what tools they use and can't live without. And that helps me prepare for doing the travel I do now.
Yeah, I will definitely reinforce that Tim Ferriss recommendation. So what board game did you bring with you that you may or may not be able to play?
It's called Ultra Tiny Epic Kingdoms. It's a board game that is a full-featured board game like we'd expect to find in a really big box, but it comes in the side of a normal deck of cards.
Oh, wow.
So in a normal deck of card box, it has some tiny wooden cubes. It has maybe half of it's actually cards, and then some other little things in there. So basically, it's my travel game. It's the game I bring with me because it doesn't take up a lot of space, but it it's a game that could take, you know, a couple hours to play, maybe. You know, you can play with, like, five people, or I can play it solo, so it's really flexible.
So what, if you could have one board game and that was it, what's everything else you had to get rid of, what board game would you keep?
That's really hard, because there's a lot of board games that I enjoy playing a lot, but when I think about, like, what game to play, or what game to bring to an event, or what game to, you know, bring with me when I travel, I have to consider, like, what other people enjoy, too. So if it's the, like, game that's easy to teach and something I can, kind of anyone could jump in and play, probably something like Carcassonne would fit that bill. You know, you lay tiles, it's really simple, people kind of pick it up pretty easily. If it's something that's just for me, that I like, one of my favorite games, probably either Race for the Galaxy or Roll for the Galaxy, which has a little bit of a roll-based system. You spend cards to level up your nation or your world or whatever, and kind of grow. Anyway, it's a more complicated game, but I find it a lot of fun.
Yeah. Outside of the board games, and if you woke up tomorrow and the internet was gone, it was out, what would you do?
So I do think about this from time to time. So in addition to Tim Ferriss, I also follow Mr. Money Mustache. He's a really great sort of money guru and advocate for, like, sort of the living the life of financial independence. You know, reaching a point where you're financially independent, and then what do you do with your time when you could do anything and not worry about getting paid for it? And so I've occasionally daydreamed, like, what it might be like someday when I can, you know, achieve that.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know that I have the answer yet, but, you know, I like working with my hands. You know, I don't do woodworking, like, full time, but I like the idea of it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I think I would enjoy it. So, yeah, I don't have a super satisfying answer for that yet, but I'm still working on it.
And you'd mentioned earlier, you're also a cyclist.
Yeah, my wife and I have lived in a few different places, San Francisco and Minneapolis, St. Paul.
Mm-hmm.
And both places are highly encouraging of sort of a car-free life, you know, culture thing, you know, with an emphasis on sort of biking and public transit.
Mm-hmm.
And we sort of fell in love with that. So when we moved to San Francisco, we gave up our car because we had to. There wasn't a way for us to have a car in downtown San Francisco. And we just decided to keep with that. So as we've lived, you know, kind of moved across the country, and now we live in central Illinois, we decided to keep a car-free lifestyle and pick up biking as our primary way to get around town. So last year we bought a Yuba Mundo, which is a long bike. It's sort of a cargo bike that has an extra long wheelbase in the back, so we could fit our kids and even groceries.
Oh, wow.
On this bicycle. And it's my wife's baby. She loves riding it. It's bright yellow, so she really likes that. But yeah, it's just a way for us to kind of get around town with our kids and still have a normal, you know, like, in quotes, I'm doing it in this guy, like, normal life, but still, like, not have a car.
Yeah. So you don't own a car at all now, or?
Not at all. No.
Wow. That's pretty impressive. That's a hard thing to do. It's just taking that step, I think. Once you finally take that first step and try it, you get over that fear. The fear is in the change, not in the event itself.
I agree with you 100%, Chris. That's exactly the point. Like, once you get over the step of, like, how will you live with this new change,
mm-hmm.
it's actually a lot easier than you think it is. So, like, when we went car-free, we're like, oh, man, what are we going to do? Like, I guess we have to take public transit. It's so inconvenient. Like, how are we going to do this? And as long as you make the time to, you know, it's going to take longer, but that's okay. It ends up costing you a lot less. You end up being able to do things like, I'm going to read for the next hour instead of drive. When we were moving from public transit to, like, now let's start biking everywhere, you start realizing a lot of psychological benefits. You start, you know, becoming a little bit more, your body responds in positive, you know, sort of ways, you
mm-hmm.
know, to that. And you start to become a little bit more healthy. And you start to enjoy biking such that I think if I had a car, I would still choose to bike. I mean, winter's coming up, but I think that's going to, you know, maybe we'll flip it back the other way. It can be difficult sometimes, but it's good. It's not as hard as most people think it is. You
mm-hmm.
just have to give it a try and commit to it for a while.
Yeah. So I always end the interviews by asking if there was somebody that along the course of your career maybe gave you a push when you needed it and you'd like to say thank you to or share some gratitude with. Is there anybody that comes to mind?
Oh, yeah, there's a lot of people, actually. So I was first introduced to Drupal when I was still in college, by my professor at the time, Stephen Merrill. He's worked for Treehouse and Phase 2, and lives in New York. He still is in doing Drupal stuff, and he helped kind of give me the confidence to pick up Drupal. He helped take me to my first camp and give my first talk. So him and Brian McMurray were both influential in kind of my Drupal upbringing, as well as Ryan, who helped with the keynote today, Ryan Sarama. Mm-hmm. He and his business partner, when they were first doing UberCart and stuff, gave me a free room in their hostel for my first DrupalCon. So they helped me as a poor college student get to DrupalCon and really experience the Drupal community really early in my experience. So it was, both were highly influential for me.
Wow, that's a great story. I love that.
It can be especially intimidating when you're coming from working online in the issue queue, where the maintainer might be under a lot of stress. He might be doing this in his free time. It might be late at night, and he's being maybe short or rude, or, you know, it feels a little aggressive.
Mm-hmm.
But when you meet them in person, you find out they're just real people. You know, they're passionate about what they do. They're excited. They're happy to help, and they're happy to have you there to help them make their job easier too. So, mm-hmm. Yeah, whenever possible, you know, go to local Drupal events or, you know, whatever. You know, go to the regional camps. Go to DrupalCon if you can. Just get out and meet people in the community.
Yeah, that's great advice. Well, David, thank you very much. This was awesome.
Yeah, you're welcome. Thank you.
Your local Drupal community is the place to get involved and hone your chops. And coming up in February, the community has the U.S. covered coast to coast. February 3rd and 4th, you have your choice between Drupal Camp New Jersey in Princeton or the Pacific Northwest Drupal Summit in Portland, Oregon. And President's Day weekend, February 16th, 17th, and 18th, slide on down to Florida Drupal Camp in Orlando. There's plenty more on the horizon across the globe, so head on over to DrupalPal.com to find your nearest local event or meetup. Or, if you're ready to level up but can't make the trip, point your browser to DrupalEyes.me and stuff your brain full of carefully crafted videos and tutorials.